Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to the Healthy Gut Podcast with Rebecca Coombs, the place where you can learn how to achieve a happy, healthy gut. Here's what's coming up on today's show. Hey, just a quick note before the show starts. I'm busy working on season 2 of the Healthy Gut Podcast, which will return in 2018. So until then, I'll be sharing some of my favorite and most popular shows with you until we return for season 2. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the show, Jessica Cox. It's really great to have you on today.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I'd love for you to tell my listeners a little bit about how you came to be a qualified and practicing nutritionist based in Brisbane, Australia.
Yes, well, I've been practicing for a bit over 10 years now as a nutritionist. As far as how I became to be a nutritionist, I kind of came from a different background to start with. I'd been working in a completely different field in arts and design and so forth, but I always had this underlying really strong passion and interest in food. I grew up on a farm which was quite self-sustainable, one of those sort of stories where you kind of grow up in an environment that you don't realize is any different, and then later on you're like, oh, that was quite a different experience to have, and I was pretty lucky. So I came from that environment, and I had a mum that was really interested in putting food together from absolute basics and baking her own bread and all of those sorts of things, so it was quite instilled in me. And as the years ticked along, I just got to a point where that passion grew more and more. I also had some of my own food intolerances going on at the time that I wasn't aware of, and digestive issues, and it just accumulated in me being a lot more interested in food and how it affects the body. And it just, again, it became a turning point where I thought, I think this is something that I want to investigate further. So I started studying just part-time while I was working, and after 6 months of part-time, that was it. I was hooked. I was just like, yep, this is me. This is what I want to do. So I took a leap and I went full-time with my studies, stopped working full-time in the career that I was in, and just picked up some part-time work and just immersed myself in nutrition. And I just loved it. I think being a little bit of a mature age student too, I was very, very nerdy about it. I was always sitting up the front of the class and taking it all in. And I came out the other side of that and literally went straight into practice. And I have been practicing ever since. I've never really had a break from practice. I just really adored the process. And I relatively would say too, I've always practiced under my own name. I think I've had 1 year out of all of that where I worked for someone else, but essentially I've worked with building my own practice and my own business. And here I am 10 years later.
Wonderful. How exciting. And congratulations on getting to 10 years. You know, as a business owner myself, it is an achievement. So well done, because it isn't easy to stay in business for yourself that long.
It is. Yeah, that's so true. And then suddenly you're there and you're like, really? Wow. Where did that 10 years go?
Yeah. One of the things that you do is you work with people with irritable bowel syndrome and also SIBO. And I'd love for you to share a bit of information about the kinds of people that you have coming through and who you work with.
For sure. So We've really built a reputation here at the JCN Clinic with working with gut issues in particular. So we do see a variety of clients, but gut health is definitely at our core. So because of that, we see a lot of clients that will come through with a diagnosed IBS from a GP, or they may have been through a series of gastroenterologists with different investigations as far as colonoscopies and endoscopies and so forth, and they're just at their wit's end. They've been told there's nothing wrong. We definitely don't have people who come through the door saying, I've got SIBO, can I be treated by you, or I have this. It's generally we're going through that diagnostic with them as far as testing and really looking at what we need to do as far as treatment and in relation to those test results that tend to come through there. But I would say that gastrointestinal issues are very much the core of what we treat.
Mm. And for those people that you do end up discovering that they've got SIBO, what's your approach around the nutritional component for them? Because that is such an important piece for people who have SIBO or IBS, because food often equals symptoms. So there's a very strong correlation, and especially a psychological one, with what a person is eating and how they feel. How do you work with them around getting them to feel better and finding food or nutrition that's working for them?
So it's very much a one-on-one process to start with. It's very individualized. So there's definitely an underlying protocol that we'll utilize, but I can't stress enough how much it comes down to each person and working with their specific requirements. So if someone comes through and they've tested positive for SIBO, then there's definitely a guideline or approach that we'll go through. But often with our testing too, we're looking outside of that. So we'll probably have done some lower bowel testing as well. So we might also be dealing with a yeast overgrowth or parasites or dysbiosis. It's often multifactorial in how we're approaching that. The other element is we do a lot of food intolerance testing. So often that might be involved as well. So it's not always as simple as, yes, you have SIBO, so you need to follow this particular diet and give them a list of foods to avoid, and that's it. In saying that, we do tend to use that biphasic diet as a guide for our clients, but then from that, we'll sit down with them and we'll go over the diet and we'll look at extra components such as maybe food intolerances if they're prevalent. If there's dysbiosis at play, we might need to look at certain foods that we need to avoid as well. Potentially from a yeast overgrowth too, that might influence what we do with the diet. So from there, what we'll do is we'll put together a really extensive dietary plan that'll have lots of meals and snacks as far as options for them. We'll include recipes. We definitely don't give people a list of what not to eat and then just say, see you later, off you go. We're very, very passionate about making sure that when we're looking at the dietary approach, that they have a really good cemented guide of how to eat, because otherwise we find people get so confused and all they see is what they can't eat. It's so, so important to give them that really good foundation.
One of the things I hear from people a lot is just enormous confusion over what SIBO diet to follow, because there's multiple of them out there. They're all slightly different to one another. Some of them are completely in opposition to each other in terms of certain foods. Some might be considered as a food to avoid, and on another list it might say, that's fine, eat it. What would be your advice to somebody who's listening today who is perhaps feeling completely overwhelmed and doesn't know where to start? Would your advice be to seek out the services of a nutritionist, or are there things that they can do themselves that might be able to help alleviate some of this stress and anxiety around what foods to eat?
I guess, and I'm always big on getting guidance, because I think that's so important to ensure you've still got nutritional balance. Because the problem for me when you're putting any sort of restrictions on a diet is that, yes, you can take away foods that might be aggravating, but you might end up eating in a very unbalanced way and end up with a plethora of other problems. So that always is a big concern for me. But essentially, I guess if someone has been diagnosed with SIBO, then I would say for them to be looking at really pulling back on their starch intake, looking at the FODMAPs as well, and I guess looking at, I know it's online, it's accessible for people, looking at that biphasic diet as a very rough guideline and a way to start. But even if people haven't been diagnosed, they could look at playing around over a series of a couple of weeks with following even just a little bit of a low starch, low FODMAP dietary intake and seeing if they feel a little better. And often if they notice they feel a little better, and often these people will come to you in clinic saying, I know that these foods aggravate me. I know that if I have a lot of starch, if I have a lot of these types of, say, you know, my garlics and my onions and so forth, you know, they just give me so much grief. They tend to tick boxes. So applying those yourself can often give you a little bit of a light bulb moment of like, okay, this is an area that needs further investigation. But I am very wary of people just playing around with this on their own accord. I do strongly think it needs to be under the guidance of a practitioner. I really do.
I hear from people quite frequently who are down to five foods.
Yeah.
And I see it on the SIBO forums online. And it's really upsetting to think of people who are so limited in the food that they're able to consume now because everything else is causing a reaction. And then I hear from other people saying, even water now causes a reaction. I cannot consume a single thing, including water, without it causing a reaction. So if someone is at that point, because I know that some of my listeners are, what would be your advice to them on what they can do today to try and perhaps alleviate some of that pain and aggravation that they're going through, and then maybe some next steps on what they could potentially do to get some help that they need to reintroduce some better nutritional intake?
Well, look, I think at the core of the problem there is the gut function itself. So when you're getting someone who is so reactive to the point they're talking about having problems with water or they're down to four or five foods, you have to step back and look at the bigger picture. And I think the problem is when people are self-treating, they get so hung up on the food itself and it's all about what can I cut out next or what am I reacting to, when they don't tend to look at the fact that there's actually a problem with their gut that needs to be treated. And once that's treated and worked with, then they're not going to be so reactive overall. You know, that to me is so, so important. I've certainly had clients, you talk about the water issue, like with feeling like water's reacting with them. I've had clients swear to me that they're intolerant to water, which is pretty amazing, or just be able to eat, as you say, like three or four foods. So what we tend to do there is look straight at the gut, and we're looking at how can we downregulate that inflammatory reaction? How can we work with that overreactive immune system within the gut? So there we're looking at settling that inflammation down and regulating the immune system of the gut. Now, from my point of view, from a practice point of view, to be honest, I'd be doing that with probably a few key supplements. Potentially, I'd be looking at some strains of probiotics to help with that increased reactivity with the immune system. Definitely some LGG we'd be looking at getting in there. Depending on what they can handle, we might be looking at just some straight glutamine, for instance. We'd certainly be looking at supporting maybe some zinc and some vitamin A and vitamin D, just definitely supporting that gastrointestinal tract as much as possible. From a food point of view, you need to really work with that client. So the problem is when they're that reactive and that sort of stressed around food, getting them to trial some different foods at that point can be really hard. But we generally are still trying to encourage them, okay, let's look at bringing into the picture still some more common low reactants. Let's look at using foods that are broken down a little easier already, whether we're looking at some broths or some soups or some smoothies with lots of natural anti-inflammatories in there that are really simple and easy to digest that we can use to, again, just really simplify that gut process while all that inflammation is settling down. You'll usually find with people, well, we definitely see this, as they'll go through ebbs and flows. So they might have a period where they do get that really strong flare up, and with that they're getting this increased reactivity where they feel like everything they consume is problematic. So it's working with them through that period and really addressing it from both sides, from a diet and generally, as I say, a supplementation form. Again, that's where a good practitioner steps in and really makes a difference, because my concerns there are if someone's going to a chemist or a health food store and just buying things off the shelf, are they getting the right thing? You know, are they potentially, they think they're buying the right supplement, that they might be buying a probiotic that's dairy-based, or they might be buying something that's got a powder that's filled with a whole lot of prebiotics for where they're at that point may not be the best thing. So, you know, it really comes down to having that right guidance.
I see, unfortunately, reasonably frequently on some of the SIBO forums that people are self-treating and they're reading what other people are using, other supplements and herbal mm-hmm. antibiotics, for instance, that other people are using, mm-hmm. and then they're ordering them online and they're self-medicating,
yes.
and then having all sorts of variety of responses to it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's what you're saying is really important, is working with someone that has the experience and the qualifications to be able to support your health journey, mm-hmm. because my concern for some of these people is that they can make themselves worse. They can end up in a worse state because they're so restricted in food and mm-hmm. who knows whether those supplements, like you say, are actually the right ones for them.
That's right, exactly. It's why I'm always hesitant even just to start listing a whole lot of supplements, because it might be great for one person, but it may not be suited for the next. And it just depends on where you are in your journey as to what is the best supplement or what is the best approach. You may be at a point where supplements aren't even something you should be even thinking about, so it really is a case-by-case basis.
Definitely. When you are working with someone that is just in such a highly inflamed state and they're reacting to everything, is there a general length of time that you see that someone can come out of that flare and start to be able to tolerate more foods? Or is it, again, a very individualized case-by-case scenario in terms of length of time it takes to calm down?
No, it's a good question. It is definitely individualized. I guess in saying that, I usually would say it's a couple of weeks. If you're working with someone from the get-go, if you've done, say, some testing and you know you've got SIBO at play or some other issues with dysbiosis and you're starting to treat that, you know, anywhere from sort of 4 to 6 weeks, you might see that they start to push into a place where they can introduce a little bit more variety back into their diet. So that's a very, very rough time frame sometimes we'll work with. But if someone's having, say, a flare, some clients I can think of that will get like a really strong flare and get really, really reactive, generally if we get on top of that straight away, within a week or two, we can settle it down pretty quickly with knowing the right things to use for them and with adjusting their diet. The interesting thing too, I guess as a side note, that I've seen is that with those types of pictures where people are super reactive, generally they've got themselves into a place, as you were mentioning, where they're just eating limited foods and they're eating them all the time. So their immune system is getting to a point where they're starting to react to those foods. again, because they're not really treating the problem as effectively. They're just cutting foods out. So after a certain amount of time, this increased reactivity starts to these foods that they're now consuming. So we find by treating their gut in that time of flare, but also adjusting their diet. So we take them a little bit away from their safe foods and push them to some foods that maybe they have been avoiding. We actually get quite a good response because suddenly those foods are new. But what we do there is we tend to not oversaturate them with those foods. We tend to use a variety of a few different things and really encourage our clients to have a little bit of this and a little bit of that and really try and get as much variety as possible. And that tends to really help with those flare situations too.
Do you see with those patients that they would have some symptoms arise after trying a new food? And is that something that that someone should expect if they've gone down to, say, a five food diet?
Yeah, for sure. So again, it can vary. It sort of depends on how symptoms present themselves for people. But if their symptoms are usually gastrointestinal, then if you're introducing a new food and then their system isn't quite ready for that food, they'll certainly show a response, whether that's be heightened bloating or bowel dysregularity. Sometimes though, depending on where they're at, you may say, okay, let's see how this food goes for you over an introductory period of a couple of days. And we might find for the first 1 to 2 days, they notice a bit of bloating and gas, and then after that, it feels fine. I guess a good example of that would be legumes. So when you're obviously taking legumes away in these dietary protocols and then you reintroduce them, they're quite a common fermentable food. So, you know, we always say to people, you haven't had legumes for quite some time. When you bring them in, you do need to expect some element of gas, some element of wind. So let's keep that in mind. So it's for us, it's being able to differentiate between, okay, what's just a new food going in and having just a little bit of a response in regards to, oh, this is new, this is different, as opposed to what's a full-blown inflammatory reaction. And you can usually tell that when you know your clients so well and you know their symptoms. You know, some people might try a new food and their whole body feels inflamed or they get aches and pains and headaches, and it's usually quite severe. So you know that that's not the right food for them. So, yeah, again, it's very much about that individual.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that I know that can occur with people with SIBO and other gut disorders is around malnourishment. Are you seeing people coming through your clinic that are malnourished and then, you know, needing to work with them on how they can perhaps incorporate more nutrient-rich foods, or or do they need to address the issue that's going on in their gastrointestinal system before that? Doesn't matter how many nutrient dense foods they eat, it's not going to be absorbed properly. What's your approach to that?
I think it's a little bit of both. It would depend on where they're at, but yeah, usually if they're at such a restrictive stage, then their gut is usually quite a mess. So you do need to look at identifying the issue there and working with rectifying that, and therefore you're encouraging an environment where absorption is going to be better. They're going to pull more from their food. Their bacteria is going to be healthier as far as fermentation and so forth goes. So naturally that's going to aid the process. However, even just anyone being on such a restrictive diet, their nutritional intake is going to be quite poor. So I would say getting in and making changes with their diet as much as possible is definitely a number one step for us, whether the gut will always be something we'll be getting into as well. But we would very much be focusing on, okay, we need to diversify your diet out. We need to look at what foods that you can have, because a lot of the time people don't perhaps realize what they can still eat with certain dietary protocols if they've been trying to do things themselves. Or the other thing we commonly see is if they've been following, say, a list of foods, they may not know how to put those foods together to create some really different or exciting meals. So they tend to stay within the realms of what they know. So we find that if we can get in and diversify within the spectrum of foods we feel we can work with. And also the other massive area we see is people aren't aware of how to create macronutrient balanced meals. So we'll see they may be eating a diet that is mainly, say, vegetable based or plant based, and they're not getting enough protein. Or we may see someone that's getting protein and vegetables, but they're not getting carbohydrate from the right sources that work for them. It could be a fat issue that they actually aren't putting the right building blocks together to create nourishing meals. And as a result of that, there's fatigue issues, blood sugar up and down through the day. We often see even bowel issues alone just from not having really good macronutrient balance. So we tend to jump on that straight up within the first consultation. We're going through giving them a better balanced approach, even within the restrictions that they're working with. And then we'll go, okay, how can we start rolling the ball in the direction of healing your gut, working with maximizing your absorption?
I think, once again, as is the case with so many of the interviews that I do through the Healthy Gut podcast, it's all about having a personalized and tailored approach to your own individual needs and having a dream team of health professionals that can help you on that journey. And given that food and nutrient-rich food is our life source, it makes sense to me to have someone like yourself, a nutritionist or a dietitian, that understands conditions like SIBO, working with you to really tailor the foods that you can eat so that you can enjoy them again. Food's great. We should love eating, and it really saddens me that so many people are so upset and anxious around food. And I know you're the same. You love food and cooking as well.
Yeah, that's it. And look, I get such a kick out of working even with highly restrictive food plans, and then taking that and helping clients still create a nourishing and delicious daily food plan. Like, it can always be done. It's just thinking outside the box. And I find that really rewarding, definitely for people to come back and be like, that's really delicious. I feel great. And that's really, really yum. That's what you want. And that's how you get compliance. That's how you get people sticking with things long term. Food needs to be beautiful as well as nourishing.
It does, definitely. I know one of the kicks I get out of life these days, now that I've got my three SIBO cookbooks out in the world, is hearing from people from all over the place saying, oh gosh, thanks so much, Rebecca. I now have a variety of recipes that taste good that I really enjoy cooking, or my kids now help cook them with me. And I'm not just eating the same foods that I've eaten for the last 6 months. I'm broadening my food intake, and I'm really enjoying it. And I just love that. That's why I've gone and created those cookbooks, definitely, so that people can be happy with their food, feel joyous around it. It should be a celebration.
And as you know, with like when you were initially diagnosed, like all you focus on is what you can't eat, because that is that's what you know, that's your security blanket. That's what you've always eaten. So it seems like your whole world of food has just been taken away from you. And it's at that moment and that time, it just seems so narrow. However, if you have the right guidance, often it's pretty amazing how a whole new world expands out, and you get this education along the way, and you learn how to work with new flavors. And the irony for us is when we work with gut issues, that we often find that majority of our clients have got a diet that is so much more diverse than the average person who may eat like an average Western diet. Their dietary intakes are amazing. And I always love that, because if you speak to someone who's not well versed in understanding, I guess, intolerances and so forth, often the response is, oh, what do you eat? You mustn't be able to eat anything. It's like, well, actually, you'd be surprised.
Yeah, I used to get that all the time. People would be like, oh my gosh, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do what you do. There's nothing left to eat. And I would say, actually, I eat the most varied and broad range of foods now. I just don't eat all the processed crap. I just eat real food, natural food, and its original source, and it's delicious, and I love it. It's colourful. My plate is always bursting with different colours. But the good thing that I've found now, and for any of the listeners that don't know where I'm at in my personal journey, is that since my gut has become much healthier and it's much less I don't have SIBO now, and my naturopath and I have worked on, you know, healing up the leaky gut and the motility and the movement of my gut. I can now eat foods that I couldn't eat for years. And it's really nice to be able to have that freedom back again. I've just come back from a long weekend with my partner's family, and you know, I've eaten quite a lot of gluten, which I don't normally eat. But what's nice is that I don't have to be that annoying person anymore going, I can't eat this and I can't eat that. Annoying to me. I'm sure it didn't annoy everybody else, but it annoyed me that I had to be so restrictive, and I was always, you know, looking at food labels and all the rest. And now I can say, okay, for 4 days, I'm not going to worry too much about what I eat, because when I come home, I'll be straight back into normal life, which is a really broad-based diet with lots and lots of vegetables and all sorts of things and very minimal processed food. Yeah. So that's a really great place to be able to get to ultimately.
Oh, yeah. We see that. We do a lot of IgG and IgA food intolerance testing at the clinic, and it's fascinating seeing results come back, some of them so highly reactive, and starting with clients from the point of view of those test results and gut health, and working with them over a couple of months or more, and then, you know, let's say 6 months later, you look at that test result again and you start to say, okay, let's start bringing some of these foods back. Let's work our way backwards through these low reactants and medium reactants. And it's amazing, you know, 9 times out of 10, these people are able to bring majority of these foods back into their diet because you've addressed the underlying cause. And I love that. Again, it's really exciting. It of course highlights the fact that it's about your gut function. Yes, there are some underlying food intolerances and allergies that are highly problematic, and they may be there for life for some people, but that might be one or two things. It's not going to be 10. So, yeah, it's pretty exciting to see.
Yeah, it is definitely. One of the things that I see quite a lot is people are sticking to these restricted diets for a long time, something like the low FODMAP diet. I seem to hear a lot from people saying, I've been on it 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. Do you have a personal view around, you know, whether we should or shouldn't be staying on these diets long term, and whether you feel that there's any long term implications on the health of our gut if we do stay on these diets for a very extended period of time?
Yeah, I'm pretty passionate about that. I'm not a fan at all at staying on very restrictive diets long term, because what you eat influences your gut bacteria, which is obviously why the SIBO diet and these other types of diets exist. And they work fabulously in the short to medium term to help with rectifying the health issues. However, the longer you apply these really extreme dietary approaches, the longer you're changing that microbiome. You're really influencing the type of bacteria that are going to thrive there. And if we're not feeding them long term with certain types of prebiotics and so forth, then that's going to influence our health by not getting certain short chain fatty acid production and so forth. There's a really, I guess, a plethora of results that can come from that, from not putting the right foundations there for our gut bacteria long term. And you know, that's something that I don't think that people really think about when they're putting these dietary processes together and doing them perhaps again without enough guidance. So all they know is that if they eat this way, they feel better, their symptoms are under control, so they feel like they're in a safe place if they stick within those foundations. But realistically, yeah, you really need to think about long term. If you have this narrow food intake, then you're really, you know, the other thing actually from that is that you're never really going to be able to expand out of that, and perhaps find a place where you're not reacting to foods anymore because you're not allowing your gut to be exposed to different types of foods. And the longer you do that, the longer you are potentially in a place where no matter what you eat seems to react. So it becomes a vicious cycle, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely, I can see how that can happen. And then there's the whole emotional side and psychological component that you then become fearful around the foods, and then you don't want to eat it more broadly. And you, I can see that one could spiral down into an ever tightening circle of problems around food and symptoms.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too is that, you know, if you feel, say someone, I mean, FODMAPs is a really common one at the moment. People are doing the FODMAP diet as a diet. You know, they're not seeing it as like a short-term approach. Plus they're treating it as the no FODMAP diet as opposed to the low FODMAP diet, which is another issue. But essentially they stay within those walls of the FODMAP diet because their symptoms aren't exacerbated. But again, like if 2 to 3 years later, you're still on that diet and you go out and you're exposed to, say, a lot of onion in a dish or whatever the ingredient is, and you get a flare, it's not a sign that you're reactive to those foods. It's a sign that your gut still isn't right, that the problem hasn't been addressed. And from my point of view too, the longer that's stays that way, the worse the problem becomes. So then that's why I think that the walls start to close in more and more, because the more you eliminate, the more you eliminate and the more you're not dealing with the underlying gut issue, the more you're going to have to continue eliminating because you're going to just become more and more reactive. So again, it becomes this vicious little cycle and not a very nice place to be.
No, it's not. It's awful for anyone that's in that condition. And there's plenty of listeners who are there right now. They're there today going, that's me.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey guys, just a quick note about my SIBO Christmas cookbook. I know that Christmas time can fill you with absolute dread as you think, what on earth am I going to eat this festive season? Well, never fear, I've come to the rescue with the SIBO Christmas cookbook. It's based on the biphasic diet by Dr. Nirala Jacoby and provides a range of delicious recipes that you can use this festive season. All recipes are 100% gluten-free and soy-free, and there's plenty of dairy-free, grain-free, sugar-free, and low FODMAP options available. All of the recipes include the Australian and the US ingredient names, measurements, temperatures, and that makes it super easy to follow recipes this festive season. Choose from really sensational appetizers or entrees. I've got a great range of side dishes which you can pair with your meat or fish or seafood that you cook for your main meal. and there are sensational dessert recipes included, as well as some really gorgeous baked goods. Have you been missing out on gorgeous little gingerbreads? Well, you've got them in this cookbook. They're so delicious. I know that this Christmas cookbook will make your Christmas even easier, because you'll know that every single recipe within the cookbook is suitable for a SIBO diet. You can order it online immediately and have the cookbook delivered to your inbox within seconds. It couldn't be easier. Head to thehealthygut.co/shop to get your hands on the world's first and only SIBO Christmas cookbook. Happy cooking, everybody. Do you have any advice on, and again, this is a question I get asked often, is how do I uncover what's going wrong in my gut? How do I uncover what caused SIBO in the first place? I have no idea. Yeah. It could be a multitude of things. How can someone begin that investigative process of trying to peel back the layers of what's going on so that they can start to, you know, try and heal that underlying cause and move forward?
I think without question, testing needs to be looked at. I really do. I mean, you could work with a practitioner and work at it from an elimination dietary point of view and then make assumptions based there on responses. But honestly, with what we have at our fingertips now, testing is the way forward. See a practitioner who works with gut issues specifically, ask around, get some good advice to start with as to who to see. I think that's really important. But then look at testing, look at SIBO testing, look at comprehensive stool analysis. So first, from my point of view, you need to differentiate there as to what's going on. Often with SIBO, there will be lower bowel issues, and conversely, they can definitely be occurring together. So if you're in a place to do both tests, that's fantastic. I think also within that environment of testing too, if you can look at food intolerance testing, I think that's fantastic. For me, the more pieces of the puzzle that we have, the quicker we can get in there and we can work with healing the gut, working with the diet in the right way, because that testing really becomes a blueprint for that client. Once we have all of that information, I often say to my clients, it's like you're giving me a looking glass into your gut. I can see everything I need to see. So let's get that information together, and then we can move forward really quickly. And the testing, I totally understand that it's an investment, but from my point of view too, you will spend so much more on trying this and trying that with different approaches if you just keep going down that track of, yeah, buying a supplement here and taking someone's advice off a blog there. And also you'll end up another year down the track with the issues still going on. So I guess I'm biased because I come from a place where I want everyone's gut to be amazing, and I know that it can be, but I think investment in testing is so important. And look, you may do a SIBO test and it comes back negative. Great, that's fantastic. We know that that's not the issue. Then we can look further at another type of test that might be more appropriate. So, you know, it's really, really helpful to utilize those tools that are there. And they're easy to do too. You know, they've all got their different collection methods, but they're all simple. They've all got sets of instructions that come with them. And then once you have those results, you can work with a practitioner to put everything into place from a diet point of view and a supplement point of view. So, yeah, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. And I know from my own journey, the first test I did was the SIBO breath test, which came back positive, and I was hydrogen dominant SIBO. But then my naturopath and I, after a few months of treating the SIBO, we then did some additional testing. So we did a leaky gut test through a urine test, and we also did the IgA, IgG test to look at what my immune system was doing both locally and full body-wise around certain foods. And we also did the comprehensive stool analysis test. So my naturopath, what was great was that once we'd got rid of the SIBO, because we knew that was the that was a big issue, it was causing a lot of my symptoms, and as soon as we were getting that under control, most of my symptoms disappeared. But then once we'd got we retested for SIBO, that came back negative, and then we looked at, well, what else is happening my gut. What was really fascinating to me was when we did the comprehensive stool analysis, that there was very minimal immune cell function showing up in my gut. And I had been chronically sick for so many years, and I got every single thing going. And it kind of gave me an explanation as to why, given that our immune system is, you know, the first line of defense is our digestive system for the immune system. And mine just wasn't there. It was on vacation. It was elsewhere. It didn't exist. But really interestingly, you know, I don't get sick anymore. And we will retest. We will redo the stool analysis and the IgA, IgG test and the leaky gut test. It'll be really, really interesting to see what's happened now. But it gave my naturopath the ability to say, this is what we need to focus on now. Here are supplements that I know can support these functions. Eradicate eggs and cane sugar from your diet while we calm the inflammation down. You know, we had a whole very methodical approach to it. And hey, it's worked. I feel amazing now. It's really good. And actually now I can tolerate some eggs again. And I've been testing them and just seeing what's happening. And I don't have any reactions to them, which is wonderful because I love eggs.
That's so great. Yeah, they're a hard one.
They were my lifesaver when I was going through SIBO treatment. And then I'm glad, in a way, I found out at the end of the SIBO treatment that my immune system wasn't coping with them. But I mourned them every day. Every morning I mourned my breakfast of eggs.
That's great. That shows the importance, doesn't it, of the like of using the tests and using them at the right time for you. You know, it's so important to have all of those pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah, it is. And now we've reintroduced probiotics and other supplements. So we're not doing it all at once. We're being really slow and methodical. I feel amazing. And it's really interesting. Every time I add something new in now, I can really feel the benefit that it's bringing to my body because it feels like it's the right time for my body. I think if I tried to do it all at once, it would have been overwhelming and I would have probably been in a highly flared state. Yeah. But now I not only am I much more in tune with my body, so I feel how it's feeling. I'm very conscious of it. But I know when it's time to do something new. And so does my naturopath. We're a really great little team. So the importance of finding someone that's in tune with you and has the skills and the expertise to help you on your journey, I think is so important. And I just, you know, I wish everyone had my gorgeous naturopath in their lives because she's been amazing for me. One other thing that people often get quite hooked up on about because popular culture talks about it are things like pre and probiotics and fermented foods. And you know, I think bloggers are great. I have a blog myself, but sometimes I think when people are talking about you must have fermented food every day, it can often be very confusing, especially for those of us that have digestive disorders and perhaps it's not the right time.
Definitely.
So what's your approach to using things like pre and probiotics and fermented foods in someone, particularly with someone with SIBO?
Yeah, again, a broken record, I know, but it is individualised. So it'll come down to what they can handle. Usually with SIBO, and to be honest, with the majority of the gut issues that we deal with, particularly if there's a really strong yeast overgrowth or dysbiosis as well, we do tend to shy away in the initial stages from fermented foods and sometimes prebiotics as well. it really does come down to what specific bacteria we might be seeing there. So what we'll do is we'll take those out of the diet for, say, maybe a 4 to 6 week period. Often it can be a little longer. And then what we'll do is we will slowly reintroduce them. So as we are seeing that the gut is getting stronger, and we're seeing symptoms dissipate, and we've also been able to loosen up the diet in other ways with perhaps introducing a bit more starch and more variety of vegetables and fruits and so forth, we'll then essentially just challenge the body. So we'll start to look at introducing some fermented foods and see how they're tolerated. And generally the gut's pretty good. It will tell you if it's ready to have those in the diet. We tend to go more with, I would say, things like your really nice sauerkrauts and kimchis, those sorts of foods first. We don't tend to jump straight back into things like kombucha and so forth. We find that they often can be a bit of a problem for people for a little longer. And kombucha is so popular right now, everyone's just drinking it down.
they are. So, it's everywhere. Everyone's talking about it.
Like guzzling their bottles away. It is something that we are a little bit wary of in the initial stages, in saying that some of our supplements that we use will have some prebiotics in them. So depending on, say, with SIBO specifically, we'll look at those supplements and see, okay, what specific prebiotic is in this supplement? Is that something that we're going to get benefits from? Are we looking at something that might actually give us a positive response, and we can look at utilizing that? Whereas in some of the lower bowel issues, we tend to find that all of them tend to be out for a certain amount of time. So I actually feel like with SIBO, there's sometimes a little bit more flexibility around supplemental prebiotics and how they can be utilized.
And I've actually got an interview coming up with Dr. Jason Horlick in a couple of months, and it's going to be all around pre and probiotics. Yeah. I can't wait for that interview because he is such an expert in this field, and I know my listeners will be loving that episode.
Exactly. Like, he definitely has so much knowledge and so much research there to show the benefits in regards to how prebiotics can be used, and there's certainly something that we've utilized in the clinic and haven't seen a negative effect, that's for sure, with including them with the treatment. So that's been really nice to see. And then with probiotics as well, there's certainly something that we've utilized. This is very much a generalization, but I would say we don't use probiotics straight up. We would tend to probably use our antimicrobials first with sometimes a little bit of some prebiotics, but then definitely probiotics have got a really important part to play. And a lot of the research that that he's done has shown that too in regards to certain strains. We use a lot of, I think I mentioned before, the LGG strain here, which I just love.
Yeah, and I can't wait to have Jason on the show because he'll just be able to share all of that research and knowledge and wisdom with the listeners. Something that also causes quite a lot of heated debate is around this concept of starving or feeding bacteria whilst in active treatment phase. Do you do either of them when it comes to working with a person with SIBO?
Yeah, I would probably more likely to work in a space where we would initially starve, inverted commas, bacteria at the start of a protocol. So we'll generally look at a dietary approach and a supplemental approach, which is about creating a die-off of the bacteria. And then after a certain amount of time, depending on their response, we'd look at bringing back in from a food point of view, a little bit more fuel. And for us too, that's a really great way of gauging where a client is at. Because often if you feed the bacteria a little bit, it will give you an indication of how much of a strong response you're going to get, and therefore give you an indication of where the level of bacteria might be at. Obviously retesting is really imperative for that too. But we find if we go with starvation of bacteria in our initial stages, we tend to see some better results. And that's probably something that we apply to the dysbiosis within the lower bowel as well, yeast overgrowth, all thus generally that whole spectrum.
That's really interesting, and there really is two schools of.
I know, right? I see you're probably
out there. Yeah, people are either they do it or they do the other way. It's really interesting. My practitioner took the approach of doing that, restricting the foods to bring the numbers down in my small intestine, and then reintroducing slowly more fermentable fibers and all the rest.
Yeah.
It worked well for me.
That
so,
sounds
you know,
like what we
but
do.
Again, it's very individual, and but it's interesting those that. It seems practitioners who take a more natural approach around with food and perhaps herbal supplementation seem to be more in line with the starvation method. Mm-hmm. And then the practitioners that use antibiotics as their primary method for reducing bacteria in the small intestine seem to, not all, but there seems to be more of a trend towards this concept of feeding the bacteria to bring them out whilst treating on antibiotics.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And look, maybe it's a time will tell thing too, if there's a better way about it. And at the end of the day, as long as you're getting the results for your client, that's the most important thing. But I know from how we've worked with clients over the years, it's a protocol that tends to work. I think the most important thing is that you don't just continue trying to starve bacteria ongoingly. At some point, you need to start to feed and re-challenge the gut.
Yeah, definitely. Something else that gets asked of me quite often is the concept of, again, there's so much discussion around this, around eating many times during a day or only eating twice a day perhaps. So either eating frequently or really giving the digestive system quite a long break between meals. Do you apply either method with your patients, or again, is it a case-by-case scenario?
I'd say case-by-case depending on what's going on. What's going on with their gut, and honestly, what's going on with their life as well in regards to their lifestyle and what their requirements are. So from a SIBO point of view, we'd probably be more so encouraging them to eat probably three main meals a day, and having them not snack as continuously. We find that's a better approach, whereas if we're working with someone maybe with more of a lower bowel issue, we might be a little bit more flexible in regards to including some snacks in there. So, that's sort of like a rough guideline of how we might operate in that way. But then you really do need to look at what the demand of that person is. So if you've got someone coming to you who is up really early in the morning and they're training, say they're spending like an hour on a bike or they're training for a half marathon or whatever it is that they might be doing, you really need to look at, okay, how can we make this work for you? You can't just have your breakfast and then not eat for another sort of 4 or 5 hours from the time you get up in the morning through till a late lunch when you've been out training. So in some aspects you do need to bend the rules to make it work for that person. I find as long as those meals are balanced correctly too, and obviously you're going to be able to sustain them better through the day. But I do, to come back to SIBO, I do really think that if you can get someone not snacking continuously, then it's going to be better for them in regards to supporting that migrating motor complex, that's obviously going to be really important. And then at night, if possible, getting them to have an early dinner and not snacking later in the evening, so they get that really nice period from dinner right through to breakfast. We'd certainly be encouraging that where possible.
And I found it interesting when I went on to the SIBO biphasic diet that, having been someone that couldn't really go more than about 3 hours between meals or snacks, that when I went on to that program, thinking I'd always be hungry, it was the opposite. I felt really full. There were times when I just didn't feel like I needed to eat, and sometimes I wouldn't have lunch, and it wasn't because I was actively avoiding it. It was just that I just simply wasn't hungry because I was eating really good quality protein and lots of vegetables and some nuts and seeds and things like that, and I had oil. I was having more oil or good fats in my diet than I'd ever had before, and it was so satisfying for me because there was no sugar giving me any of those horrible blood sugar spikes and dips anymore, and I felt great. I was like, well, I'm actually really satisfied on this program.
That's it was again.
A surprise.
That's that again, that if you've got that right balance, you've got a whole food approach, really nutritionally balanced, then you can generally really apply like a 3-meal-a-day way of eating without too many concerns. It's when people don't really understand how to build a meal in a balanced way that they run into problems, that they're having their breakfast and an hour later they're starving hungry. So again, yeah, it's working with someone who knows how to create that meal plan for you.
Yeah, definitely. The final question I have is around shopping for food. It's something that we all have to do. Do you have any advice or tips on how people can find the best quality food to help support them at a nutritional level? You know, should we be looking at just having organic food, or are there certain things that we should be looking for on packaging that are your big no-nos? What's your advice on getting the best out of our food when we're buying it from the supermarket?
I think as first and foremost, trying to ensure that your food is whole food. And by that, I mean fruit, vegetables, meat protein, if you're including that, your good quality fats and your nuts and your seeds and so forth. Realistically, putting real food in your shopping trolley is first and foremost the most important thing that you can do. The more packaged food that you're bringing into your diet, the more usually you're bringing in processed food, then that's going to include different sorts of preservatives and additives and so forth. In saying that, I think if there are certain foods that you're buying that are packaged and so forth, getting used to looking at the back and checking for certain common additives that might be problematic. Usually one of the biggest ones, MSG, which is 621, tends to really knock people around with gut issues. Nitrates are really important to keep an eye out for. But I really think anything that you're looking at where you're looking at the back and half of the ingredients you don't understand, then realistically you don't want to be putting that into your shopping trolley. It's always about the more natural, the better. Organic, look, if you can afford organic, that's great. I think sometimes it can stress people out more. So I always say, look, just if you can purchase some organic produce, make it more about your fruit and your vegetables. It's a good place to start. And if you can look at hunting down some local farmers markets or online, there's some really great options there now where you might be able to get some seasonal produce delivered. And that's the great thing about farmers markets too, is that you're generally going to be pushed towards eating more seasonally, which I think is really, really fantastic. And look, I think preservative wise too, like there's a lot of preservatives that aren't fantastic, and there's some information out there. I'm trying to think of the name. There's a really great little booklet that you can get, and that's probably online now too. I think it's called the Maize. I can't think of it. I'll have to let you know. Maybe it's a show note one. but they're, you know, not all of them are going to be really bad. You can get, for instance, vitamin C as a preservative and so forth. That's where I think sometimes having a reference guide to refer to can be quite advantageous. But honestly, as long as you're going for a whole food approach, you're not going to be running into problems as far as what you decide to pop in the trolley. You know, if you know what it is, you know that it's basically something that grew in the earth in some capacity, then generally things can't be too bad.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, and it's something that I now implement with my food. I really aim to eat food in its original state, so be it fruit, vegetables or meat or anything like that. And I really have reduced significantly the amount of processed food that I eat, to the point where now really the only time I go to the supermarket is to buy toilet paper and maybe some oil. But a lot of that I also get from my health food store. So it's a really different experience now on how I used to eat.
Yes, I think you'll find the more you move towards a whole food diet, the less time you spend in supermarkets. And that doesn't mean you need to spend more money. I think ironically, it can be the other way. I think, you know, you just need to look at where you can source these other foods that are going to be better for you from a nutrition point of view. As I said, like seasonal produce, and it might just mean once every fortnight because they generally tend to last longer, or once a week. Yeah, you put aside an hour on a Sunday morning to go to your local farmer's market, and you pop into your local bulk health food store and grab a few bits and pieces. And yeah, I actually think your shopping bill tends to go down more than anything.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing that I didn't realise was even on the foods that I wouldn't consider as overly processed, but they're still processed food. It's not like I'm going and eating crisps and chocolate bars, but on other items, let's say on the occasional piece of bread that I have, or something else like that, I can feel it. I feel that nutritionally I just didn't get a really great meal. I don't feel vibrant. And so my desire to eat the processed food also diminished greatly when I can feel good on the food that I'm eating. So,
I love seeing that in clinic with clients, how their palate changes. So, you know, when they first, you make those changes initially, as I said, it's like having the rug pulled out from underneath you, and then you learn all of these new flavors and so forth. And then there comes an opportunity somewhere along the way where maybe you're offered a picnic bar, or you go eat an ice cream or whatever it is. And in your mind, you associate it with tasting a certain way. And then you take a bite and you're like, ooh, this is actually nothing like I remember. And there's our taste buds change, and we start to really appreciate the sweetness in natural foods more. And then suddenly sugar, like added sugar, becomes really something that's quite distasteful. It always fascinates me.
I remember feeling that exact experience when I first tried something sweetened after my SIBO treatment, and I had longed for something sweet, and then I took a bite and my taste buds felt like they hurt, and it was so unpleasant, and I felt so sick from it. It wasn't an enjoyable experience whatsoever. And I wanted to eat, you know, I used to make my own, well, I still do, my own chocolate, just with, you know, raw cacao powder and raw cacao butter and a little bit of 100% natural stevia, ground leaves. And for me, that is so sweet, and it's plenty. Other people think it tastes horrible. For me, I can taste the sweetness in it now that I don't have a mouth that's constantly bombarded with over sweetness. So it's a very, very interesting journey that one goes on. Jessica Cox, thank you so much for coming onto the Healthy Gut podcast today and sharing your wisdom on all things nutrition. If anybody would like to connect with you, what's the best way for them to reach out and connect with you?
The best way would be definitely jumping online. So they can go to jessicacox.com.au, and through there you can go to the clinic tab. You'll be able to find all the information about the JCN clinic and be able to contact us through the contact section. You'll also find me online on Instagram at Jess Cox Nutritionist and on Facebook too at Jessica Cox Nutrition. So if all else fails, just Google Jessica Cox Nutritionist and I'm sure something will pop up.
Yeah, and all those links are in the show notes for anyone that would like to make contact with you. So thanks once again for coming onto the Healthy Gut podcast today. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Does the thought of eating for Christmas fill you with absolute dread? Well, the good news is that I have a very special SIBO Christmas e-cookbook, which you can order and download immediately. It's perfect for Christmas meals and contains beautiful and delicious recipes that are SIBO friendly. So you can choose from a selection of appetizers or entrees, beautiful side dishes that can go along with the meat and seafood dishes that you create. And we also have amazing desserts and very delicious baked goods that you can make for yourself or as a treat for somebody else. So make sure you head to thehealthygut.co/shop and you'll be able to grab a copy of the SIBO Christmas cookbook today. Happy cooking. You've been listening to the Healthy Gut Podcast with your host, Rebecca Coombs. To learn more about the Healthy Gut or our podcast, head to thehealthygut.co/podcast. And as we are fully funding this podcast, if you would like to help support the continuation of this podcast so that we can continue to bring you future episodes, all you need to do is make a contribution at thehealthygut.co/podcast. We would like to thank Belinda Coombs for the production, editing, and original music score of this podcast. To hear more of Belinda's music, head to soundcloud.com/Belinda Coombs. The Healthy Gut Podcast is a production of The Healthy Gut. Thanks for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.